hope all of you have had a good day, a pleasant day. It's good to be back together again. Enjoyed the day and being with some folks today that I hadn't been with in a while. Some old friends. Matt Qualls, I think, still works in, doesn't he work in the admissions, or I've forgotten now exactly what part of the school, but I hadn't seen Matt in a while. We lived in Atlanta together for a while, worked not together, but both in work of gospel preaching, and it's good to be with him for a little while. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad that all of you have continued to come as you have so faithfully and have encouraged me with your attention. And I truly hope we're doing some things here that are helpful and trying to strengthen our faith and to turn us to God and Jesus Christ and to His Word and to be as careful as we can to try to follow His teaching with all the devotion of our heart that we can muster. Time Magazine recently, a little news clip, said that in Poland recently, a paleontologist had found four-legged animal footprints in rock that was supposed to be, or that is supposed to be, we are told, 400 million years old. We have a problem. According to the evolutionary time scale, we weren't even out of the water yet 400 million years ago. I tell you that to say that, you know, every now and then you'll find something like that that will let you know that, and I think you probably know this, you have heard enough teaching and preaching, and I may not tell you anything new tonight, but I'm telling you that we obviously cannot put our trust in science. We put our trust in God. And that's the reason for this lesson tonight. This is a little bit of a different kind of lesson, I know that. I know I preached something like this one time. My own mother was in the audience, and afterwards she came out and said, "Why do you think you have to preach something like that?" She wasn't being ugly about it, but she just didn't see the necessity, as I see it, preaching about things such as this, the evidences for the creation of God, which is really what this is about. And my intention wholeheartedly is to take the Word of God and to elevate it, to hold it up high, and to say that we can believe it, just as it's recorded. That doesn't mean I have all of the intricate, detailed answers about some things that people may ask. But I do think that it's clear enough that we'll build our faith, that we can trust God, and believe that not only did He create us, but He created all living creatures, and that we have a connection with Him because we've been created in His image. As I said, I don't always trust science. I'm thankful for a lot of things I've learned through because of science. I read a quote about Benjamin Franklin by him. And 200 years ago, I think science was a whole lot more about the good that it can bring the human race, than it is today. That's the George Rogers Clark Memorial. Lewis and Clark made their way out west. That was built in Vincennes on the Wabash River. Was built in 1954. It was built out of Indiana limestone, so I didn't know something about that growing up in Bedford and Lawrence County, Indiana, the limestone capital of the world, as we like to boast. There are several caves in that part of the state that you can go into, and some of those caves have some rather elaborate stalactites, and it's kind of neat to go in there and see some of those if you like to go underground. I saw this picture in 1991. Oh, slow down. Go backwards. Please go backwards. Shane, help me. Here, I'll do it. I got it. There we go. Now, don't do this to me tonight. There we go. Slow down. That's a stalactite, and this is a picture taken in 1991 by Don Patton, and that's in the basement of the George Roger Clark Memorial. Do the math. Built in 1954 out of Indiana limestone. Water has rained and seeped through the limestone for, what was that, 37 years? And informed that. When Don Patton looked at that, he said that was larger than any of the stalactites he had personally seen in any of the caves in southern Indiana. And you go in a cave, and what does that fellow tell you? Thousands of years it took, little by little, for all of those to form. Ironically, the week later, after I first saw this, there was an article in the Indianapolis Star about the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., and they were having problems with stalactites in the basement there as well. And some of that built out of Indiana limestone. Now, what I'm saying to you is that there are some interesting things out there. I am going to give Don Patton credit, and I'm just going to tell you right now that a good bit of the information tonight I'm going to share with you that I have learned from him. I don't know if you've ever heard Don present any of his material. Don decided in his later years to give himself to this study. He now has a Ph.D. in geology. Used to preach the gospel, but now has gone into this, absorbed into this material and presenting these kind of things. And he would do a lot better job of it than I would, I'm sure. But I say that to you, again, point those things out to show you that everything you say here being said isn't necessarily so. And there's evidence out there that may demonstrate that very fact. God did make dinosaurs. I believe that. Galatians, Genesis chapter 2, 1 and 2. But especially in chapter 1, in verse number 24. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping things, and beast of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And then he said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And so it was. And God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So I believe that on the sixth day, God created dinosaurs. Now, anything that was in the sea that might have been considered dinosaurs, he had already made. But I believe on the same day that he made man, he made these creatures we recognize as dinosaurs. Is what I'm doing tonight gospel preaching? Well, you may think this is a stretch, and I'm probably going to do a whole lot more than maybe some folks are sometimes comfortable with, and I don't intend to make anybody uncomfortable with what I'm going to do tonight. I believe in Acts chapter 17, the Apostle Paul, speaking to an audience in Athens, appealed to the creation to try to convince those Athenian philosophers that God is. And even quoted one of their poets. He knew enough about what they had to say to use it to help them see that God is. And so tonight, that's really what I'm going to do. And looking at this lesson together with you. I am not a scientist. I'm not a geologist. I'm not a paleontologist. I'm not an archaeologist, although I think in my next life, I think that's what I'd like to be. None of that. But I can read those who are, just like you can, and try to help present some lessons to you that will help you recognize that you don't have to be afraid of dinosaurs at all. I suppose the dinosaur craze has probably died down a little bit since my children were young. Some of the things I have here were because of some things that they were beginning to be taught, even in public schools, that got my attention and made me kind of jump into this. And then, like I said, in 1991, when I first heard Don Patton present this material, some of this material, it got me really excited about it, and so for that reason, I'd like to talk about it. I'm going to do a couple things here at the first. I'm going to go through them rather quickly, in case there's any questions. What happened to them? Now that I think about it, I wish I'd done this. I don't know. I wish I was going to get ready to put that on the screen. But that's kind of what I'm getting ready to put up there. What happened to them, I really don't know, and neither do a lot of scientists. We can only confess that our supreme ignorance of the real causes of dinosaur extinction and say, quite simply, we don't know. There are a whole lot of theories about that, but the bottom line is I'm not real concerned about that. Although, I'm going to segue into this quote. This is by John Horner, who is a fellow who very much into dinosaurs in this country out west. Does a lot of digging in Utah and Montana and Wyoming, those parts of the country. One particular area in Utah, he says there were 30 million fossil fragments in that area. This is not a believer in God at all, as far as anything that I've read. At a conservative estimate, we had discovered the tomb of 10,000 dinosaurs. There was a flood. This was no ordinary spring flood from one of the streams in the area, but a catastrophic inundation. That's our best explanation. It seems to make the most sense, and on the basis of it, we believe that this was a living, breathing group of dinosaurs destroyed in one catastrophic moment. You think? Maybe? Possibility? Now, he's not arguing for the flood of the Bible. He would be arguing for some other larger catastrophic flood that may have occurred out west. But at least from his evidence, he says all of those died at one moment, just like everything else that was on the earth during the days of the flood. Well, secondly, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this one either. I have a little fun with this one. You probably know that some believe that birds evolved from dinosaurs. I still haven't figured out the survival of the fittest, how that fits in with some of that. Because how the Stegosaurus ended up being a chicken. I thought a Stegosaurus could take care of himself rather well, but apparently not. And so they became birds. What I'm going to do here with you in the next couple of moments is show you that science against itself. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to show you that science doesn't agree about this, so dismiss this too. In other words, lay this aside for the most part. If you look the evidence squarely in the face, there's no question that birds evolved from theropods, two long meat-eating dinos. That's from a professor at the University of Chicago from a book entitled When Dinosaurs Roamed the Earth. States that as just fact. You know, you read that, and there again, there's science telling us this is the way it is. By studying fossils, scientists discovered that birds are related to dinosaurs. Really. Again, simply stated as a fact. And by the way, you know where I got that quote? An issue of Lego Mania magazine. See, you know, that's where I get my science. But I was reading the things coming to the house to my kids, you know, and I read that and I thought, well, good grief. I'm just going to pass this off to my kids like this is a known fact and any dummy knows this. So anyway, you know, that's where I got that. According to a new study published in last week's issue of Science, the mighty dinosaur and the lowly chicken shared an important feature, and that is feathers. Again, the assumption that because they perhaps have found something that they think indicates that, and we're going to talk about what that is here in just a moment. The article stated, and I want you to hear this, researchers determined that the dinosaur may have had feathers and suggest that the dinosaur lost its aerodynamic capabilities. I suppose the first time it jumped out of the tree and figured out it couldn't fly. But anyway, you know, that, again, suggests maybe that's the kind of stuff you get when you read some of these kinds of things. Archaeopteryx, here's the holy grail that they think they found, the connection between dinosaurs and birds. They were found in Germany, I believe, in the Bavarian area of Germany. No, I'm sorry. Yes, that's correct. And this may be a model. I saw one in Atlanta, in a natural museum there in Atlanta. And so that's what it looks like. Now, what you see there is supposed to be a bird, and you can see the imprint of the feathers. And yet what we've got here is it's got teeth, and it's also we've got claws on its feet, and so therefore that had to be an ancestor of a dinosaur because, you know, dinosaurs had claws and they had teeth, and so this bird does too. And so somehow there has to be a connection. Do you get all of that? Archaeopteryx was the first bird, stated as a fact. Now here again, listen to this. I'm going to tell you where else I get my science from: Burger King. That was on a little card in the kids' meal when my kids were little. And again, that's just telling my children. This is a fact. You're supposed to believe this. So that's the science according to Burger King. Most paleontologists believe that Archaeopteryx evolved from just such a small bipedal dinosaur. Archaeopteryx makes an ideal link between reptiles and the birds, is therefore a major piece of evidence for the theory of evolution. At least they think that. However, we have a problem. Fossil remains claim to be one of crow-side birds 75 million years older than Archaeopteryx have been found. A paleontologist at Texas Tech University who found the fossil says they have advanced avian features. In other words, he says we found a fossil over here that's got feathers that's 75 million years older than Archaeopteryx. Now, wait a minute. That doesn't fit. Yeah, that's right. It doesn't fit. And the reason it doesn't fit, because it's not supposed to fit. Because there's no connection. The only connection is the same creator created all of these things. And sometimes we just happen to have some of the similar features. And that's all that says about that, is God is able to do that and has done that and chose to do that. Here's another quote. The dinosaur-bird connection is fashioned from many anatomical similarities, but precious few fossil links. These are scientists saying these things. Archaeopteryx probably cannot tell us much about the early origin of feathers and flight in the true proto-birds because Archaeopteryx was, in the modern sense, a bird. This person's saying it's a bird. It's not a middle or a missing link between dinosaurs and birds. It was a bird. And so, what I'm saying to you is, and here's the last one on this. Here's a fellow, and again, I quote fellows that, you know, they're supposed to know what they're talking about. Yale University released a landmark publication. The impetus for the book was the fact that this dinosaur and origin of birds had become overnight the dogma in the field, and many of us from the ornithological side felt that it was simply wrong that birds descended from dinosaurs is utter nonsense. Okay, you got that? So it depends on which scientist you read. One of you is going to tell there's a connection. These fellows say, no, there's not. Do I not have this on? Is it on? Make sure. Okay. All right, now I'm going to get to the stuff I have more fun with. Dinosaurs really ever exist? I had a Christian suggest to me one time, he thought God just put the bones here to see if he could mess with us. That may not have been his words, but I'm sorry, I'm just not the God that I serve. I think they're real. I think they were real. And I think the bones are here because they were once living creatures that have become fossils for us to look at. What do we know about them? Not a lot. I mean, really all we know are just precious few things. A couple of things I found interesting. Fossilized remains of unhatched embryos have been found, including the first fossils of embryo skin ever seen by human eyes. That was kind of interesting. I don't have the picture of that in particular. I'll tell you what it reminded me of, the outside of a basketball. Now, that's somebody from Indiana telling you that, right? That it looked like the pebble cover of a basketball. Dinosaur found in Mongolia's Gobi Desert sitting on a nest of eggs. This was a news item just a few years ago. And that's interesting, found in the desert, Mongolia's Gobi Desert. Jack Horner, that same fellow quoted earlier about the flood in Utah, considered it one of the two best specimens of dinosaur fossils ever found because it reveals behavior. In other words, and this is one of those connections again, they make dinosaurs found sitting on eggs. Again, that's kind of fascinating, fossilized like that, all in one catastrophic moment, perhaps, you think. And then there it is for us to find a couple, 3,000, 4,000 years later. And they think, well, because dinosaurs sat on eggs and birds sat on eggs, then they have to be connected. Well, that's not necessarily so either. And I like this one. Here's more science from really great science books. A woman gave me this after I taught this one time. This is from Constructed Playthings. It's cataloged with children's toys. The authenticity of these prehistoric replicas will take you back in time. All 12 dinosaurs, get this, my emphasis, are accurately painted and proportionally scaled. Time out. Accurately painted. Really? We didn't know we knew the colors of them. Well, Jurassic Park. Well, wait a minute. Time out. You know, this is what we know. And so what I'm saying to you is we got to sometimes get back to what can we know. And that's what scientists do. They go beyond what we know, what we can know, and then they really start philosophizing all over the place and summarizing and assuming a lot of things. Fossils and dinosaurs. Dinosaur fossils appear suddenly in the fossil record. This would be what we would expect that fits the creation model. points to a rapid deposition under catastrophic events. If you have a fossil, and I wish I could talk more about this, I like to talk about it, but there are other fellows, again, know more about it than I do. But basically what you're talking about, in order to have a fossil, you have to cover it up real fast, and then it doesn't have time to decay laying on top of the ground. If I'm taking a run or walk, I don't run very much, obviously, but if I'm taking a walk along the road and there is a possum or an armadillo and it gets left on top of the ground over on the side of the road, and about a week later I come by and it's got a lot less than it used to have, and then about another week it's got a lot less, and then another week it's just nothing but bones laying there, and then after a while they've been scattered out because it's got scavengers that decided that was free supper. And that's what happens to stuff laying on top of the ground. If you bury it real fast and then it fossilizes, it leaves really interesting impressions. Like you see these ferns they find or fish that you find. It looks like healthy fish. It didn't look like it had been laying on top of the ground for a long time. It meant it had to be covered very quickly. And that's true. You can go to the northern part of Alaska and find real dinosaur bones. Not fossilized, still bone. I've got a book about some guys that made that trip. I don't want to make it. The mosquitoes are bigger than airplanes. But, they described it was, they really, really wanted to go there. But they finally got there, and they were able to dig up these bones. And when you cut them, they smelled like bone. You ever cut bone with a saw of some kind? You know how that smells? And when they cut these, that's exactly what it smelled like. So they had not fossilized in 65 million years, because that's when they were supposed to have become extinct. So that's you can go there and get them. Scientists have found that both wood and chicken bones, when placed with the right minerals and the right amount of water, can become fossils in just 5 to 10 years. Even the largest dinosaur bones would only take a few hundred years to completely mineralize if the conditions were right. Many of the dinosaur bones found today are still partially bone, not stone. If dinosaurs truly died 65 to 225 million years ago, it's likely all of the bone would be stone now rather than being part bone at all. Here's another find. Incidentally, someone asked this question in Science Magazine. Round and teeny and nucleated, these are red blood cells that have been found in a dinosaur fossil, in dinosaur bone. They were threaded through the bone like red blood cells and blood vessels, but blood cells in a dinosaur bone should have disappeared eons ago, these scientists say. He says, I got goosebumps. It was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. The bones are, after all, 65 million years old. How could blood cells survive that long? Well, you think maybe they survived that long because it hadn't been that long ago that they were here, not 65 million years ago at all. What do dinosaurs and evolution have to do with each other? This fellow, an evolutionist, said, I must admit to being tired of those stupid great beasts, though they are the best recruiting sergeants for our subject among young people, including myself. Stephen Gould was a noted paleontologist, an evolutionist, a professor at Harvard when he died, and he said that it was the study of dinosaurs at a young age that led him into the study and the acceptance of the theory of evolution. And that's the reason I take dinosaurs and pick those out, because they say this is what they're going to use to try to convince us that evolution is true. Now, what got me thinking about this? It was a little 6-year-old girl coming home one day and telling her daddy, Daddy, my teacher today said dinosaurs were here before we were. And she's sitting right over here tonight. And I thought, okay, here we go. We've got a battle to fight. And I got to tell you that she was a sweet teacher, and I asked her about it when I got to see her a little bit later. And maybe I asked her, and Amanda asked her, and this came back to me from Amanda, but she said something, well, all I meant was that dinosaurs actually lived in Georgia before men lived in Georgia. And I'm not going to question her honesty about that. I'm not even sure I agree with that. But the fact she tried to kind of get out of that, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe that's what she believed about. So I thought, well, if you're going to go to public schools, this is what you're going to hear. My Nicholas's second grade science book, typical evolutionary line of thought, and it had a line in there about, listening to the dinosaurs, but it was so sad that children could never have played with dinosaurs. could never have had them for pets. Because, see, they didn't live at the same time. And so that was the view that was presented. Dinosaurs and humans, they ever coexist? I really like the Flintstones. But this wasn't good science, because that couldn't be true. You know, that the guys that did this didn't believe the science that we're talking about, because you've got, Fred and Barney, Wilma, on dinosaurs. So these guys evidently missed what we're talking about, or they had this cartoon long before they started studying this very deeply. Creation Museum, south of Cincinnati. I think it's Covington, Kentucky, on this side of the river. Has opened up recently. This is the Times Daily. It's a newspaper in Florence, where we live. One display shows humans coexisting with dinosaurs, despite the two species being separated by 65 million years in most science texts. Again, there's the storyline you're given. And so here's some folks said, that just can't be true. And this was kind of sad to me. I would have hoped a little bit better from Mr. Billy Graham. But in a question and answer, he was asked, did they have dinosaurs in Noah's Ark? Mr. Graham replied, no. Noah's Ark apparently did not include dinosaurs. The reason is because dinosaurs and similar ancient creatures that we only know from fossils were extinct by the time God created the human race. So I'm not sure when I read what I read to you a while ago about the sixth day of creation, where Mr. Graham made that distinction, or where the dinosaurs were created and then man, and how he got 65 million years in between those two events. But that's sad. And again, there are religious people that believe these things. All right, here we go. Nova TV special, God, Darwin, and Dinosaurs. Dinosaur footprints, side by side with humans. Finding them would counter evidence that humans evolved long after the dinosaurs became extinct and back up the claim that all species, including man, were created at one time. Before I show you the next picture, this was in the newspaper in Marion, Indiana, that stated dinosaurs leave big prints. Graduate student finds 500 tracks last summer. This was found in Sunland Park, Texas. These were footprints of theropod, three-toed dinosaurs. Again, you read that article, nobody questions that. Hey, we got dinosaur footprints in Texas. Everybody knows that. That's fine, well and good. We agree with that. These are different. That's Mr. Patton on the right, Mr. Don Patton. These are theropod, three-toed dinosaur footprints found in the Palaxy River area, just a little bit southwest of Dallas-Fort Worth. In fact, you see that layer of kind of dirt over there on the side when the river has dried up and they came in. And by the way, they've been able to demonstrate these weren't carved by any means, because there was this dirt, this top layer of sediment on top of that. And then they came in with a front loader or bulldozer kind of and pushed it out of the way and covered all of these, I'm sure. Sprayed all the dirt out of them, and there you've got, left, right, a three-toed dinosaur walking through there, leaving his footprints in this soft mud at the time. Then it gets covered up, it gets hardened, and now we dig it up, and there it is. All right? So, dinosaur footprints in Texas, we're going to accept that. But human footprints? This is another same of that part of the area, and I'm looking primarily at this area here where there is this left-right, three-toed dinosaur going this direction, and evidently a left-right human footprints going this direction. If these were mine, they'd been going this direction, but that's another story. Anyway, apparently that particular day went this way. Some more of the pictures, and maybe some of you have seen these. Don, this is his foot, if you want to know whose foot it is. But anyway, there's an imprint of a human footprint there. And he was able to step into that and see how nicely the toes. I couldn't show this. It's a video. I guess I could, but I'm not ready to do that yet. That's tradition, you know. But anyway, one of those traditions. But he showed a video of somebody running across wet concrete. And what it did when you drug your toes out of the concrete, and it really kind of amazing how much it looked like these footprints in this area. That, believe it or not, you see the toes? So there's the toes, the print of the dinosaur, and right inside of it is a human footprint. Now this guy was brave. He was running after the dinosaur. Don had a little fun with this. I don't know if he did the picture or not, but that was his picture of, you know, guys running for the hills when the floods came. If that's indeed what that was all about, that's not for sure, but that's a possibility. Human footprints. Were they carved? A PBS special on dinosaurs, May 25th, 1997, mentioned the dinosaur prints that I've just showed you in Palaxy River, mentioned them as authentic. By the way, it made no mention of the human footprints. What would you expect? Someone said years ago that there was a carved footprint found. Okay, maybe there was one found. Let's deal with that. This is a footprint of some kind of a large cat that's found in that same area where the dinosaur footprints and the human footprints were found. Was this carved? No. So they cut it up and did some studies on it. And what they found was that when you went across, you see the way this is formed here. And I'm going to give you a real simple layman because that's all I can handle. But if you carve something, you would see the layers like a highway that goes through a cut. And you see over there and you see the strata when it cut through it. But if you stepped on something and pressed on it while it was still soft, wouldn't it go like this? Even if you had a little white sand and a little black sand and maybe a little clay underneath there, and it would go squeeze out between your toes, you know, like the side of the pond when you stepped in that old muddy pond. And what he's saying is that's exactly what you see here. This is not carved. This is what the ground did when that cat stepped on it and pressed it out. So that's what you find with those human footprints too. I think they took one of those and cut it in half and showed the same thing. It's true of that. That's a fossilized finger that was found in that same area too. And someone took that and said that they gave it some x-ray and CT scan, MRI, and was able to identify joints and trace tendons throughout the length of the fossil. His expert conclusion is there can be no reasonable doubt that this is a fossil finger. Again, that was found where these dinosaur footprints and human footprints were found in the Palaxy River. Glen Rose, Texas, I believe is the name of that. Dinosaur National Monument. We went out there in 2001. It's kind of neat to see. Cultural history dates back 10,000 years. Indian rock art in the form of petroglyphs and pictographs provide evidence that many people have come before us. The Fremont Indians lived in the canyons and Dinosaur National Monument 8 to 1,200 years ago. Well, what did they do? They drew pictures on canyon walls at times. And this is one. Now, listen, you know, some of these folks weren't any better artists than I am, or maybe you are. And maybe we have to use a little bit of imagination with this one. But someone again suggested that this might have been a dinosaur with his tail and resting back on his tail. But if you don't believe that one, we'll see if we can see a couple others. This one's a little harder. It may not be able to see that. You see the head there? You come around there, and there's a tail, and there's the legs. And that looks like a stegosaurus. And you're asking, how did the Indians know what stegosauruses look like back all that long ago? Maybe because they saw one? Or at least lived close enough to the people who had seen them. This is in Montrose County, Colorado. It's on private property. Again, not the great best picture in the world, but that's interesting. Three-horned. I always, you know, again, I show my ignorance in trying to describe some of these things or even pronounce some of these words. You can see what kind of dinosaur that might have been. These are Inca burial stones dated in the Inca culture, about 5 to 1500 AD. These were stones you find in burial places where this culture buried their dead. And it's interesting, again, you see some kind of a dinosaur here, a stegosaurus perhaps. Here's another one. Triceratops. Is that right? Am I saying that right? Yeah, thank you. Say that one more time.
Triceratops.
Thank you. Don't ask me to say it. You just heard it right there. But you can see that, the three horns and the frill there. This is again in Mexico, South America. Here's some more. That looks like something we look like a dinosaur. Again, these all dated to be at least 800 or so years ago. Let's see, I think I've got another one there. There we go. This is a burial cloth. It's quite not as, I don't like it as well as the others, but you can kind of see perhaps a lady's embroidered a dinosaur there. All right. These are the most fascinating ones to me. These were figurines that were found in Mexico, about 33,000 of them. I am not going to take the time tonight as I try to get through this. If you want some verification information, I will give this to you, but there's a lot of effort made to verify these things. Some of these were sent to the University of Pennsylvania. They dated them, and they dated them 2,500 years before Christ. When they found out where they came from, they decided, maybe that's not so. They didn't like those figures very well when they found out they came from these dinosaurs that were found by this fellow in Mexico. There are several of these that he found. It's interesting how close they look like to particular pictures in textbooks that we find even in textbooks today. One Japanese, by the way, company went there and filmed it, and it shows one of the Japanese commentators holding this up and then looking at a Japanese book on dinosaurs and looking at it going like, whoa, how did this happen? How did these end up looking so close to one another? Again, maybe because some of these folks had close enough knowledge to recognize what they were and seen them. I guess that picture was supposed to look a little bit like that one. Here's a couple more. Again, thousands of these were found. And again, the question why, I like this one, guy riding on top of it. You know, that's good. So maybe Jurassic Park didn't have it all right. And this, I love this one. This guy's hugging him goodnight, I guess. This is his pet. The conclusion is inescapable. Man and dinosaurs very likely would have lived, according to these finds, 2,000 years ago. One more. That look familiar? I have to admit, I have not seen the movie, the Tomb Raider series, Laura Croft, is that her name? Apparently they were filmed over here. This is a very difficult area to get into. You risk your life unless you have permission to get into this part of Cambodia. And apparently somehow Don Patton gets this way to get over these places, and that's him standing in this temple that you would have seen in some of those movies, evidently. This is getting a little bit closer to the corner, and you get a little bit closer to the corner, and he's getting ready to show you a picture. And he thought it was interesting that this picture, there were other animals carved into this side of this temple. And he looked at that and thought, you know, that looks a lot like a stegosaurus. And the fellows that put a book together that had these pictures in them are very highly respected for their authenticity. And he suggested that that was, again, more evidence that somebody in the world knew what these things looked like long before we did. That is a coelacanth. Thank you. I need somebody to help me with these. I've said that right before. A coelacanth. That's what it says right here in my notes. For decades, evolutionists taught that those had become extinct. And about the same time as dinosaurs, about 65 million years ago. And what's been neat about, because you had that, they're now being caught. This was one of the first articles that I read. That's been several years ago. One evolutionist said that he could not have been more surprised if he had come across a living dinosaur. And went on to say that those modern coelacanths look just like their fossilized ancestors. Really? You know, the fossilized ancestor was supposed to be pre-65 million years ago, and then a guy catches them, and they look alike. What would you expect if God created these things? Does the Bible mention dinosaurs? Well, no, it doesn't, but neither does it mention kangaroos, and I think they exist even today. I think I've seen one in the zoo. So the fact that the word's not there doesn't mean that God didn't create them. dinosaur was a word that was invented apparently in 1842 by Richard Owen, according to what I've read. Would not have been used in the King James translation of Scripture because the word didn't exist. Comes from a Greek word meaning fearfully great, and sauros meaning lizard or reptile. Job chapter 40. Let's get to the Bible. And let's see a possibility. If a dinosaur is described in Scripture. Of course, the great story here is Job and his conversation with God and his back and forth with God and his awful trials, difficulties, lost his family, children, his health, his livelihood, his support of his wife, his friends who have wrong ideas about why all this has happened to him. And now he stands alone with God, and he finally gets to the point, he looks at God and says, "Why are you doing this to me?" And he pours his heart out to God. And God then turns around and says, "Job, you need to listen to me for a minute. I need to remind you of something. I'm God, and you're Job. And I'm going to remind you that I'm bigger than you are." Now, not in so many words, but and not in an unkind way, but kind of like a parent when our children are little. They want to know why they are supposed to do what we ask. "Because I'm bigger than you." Now, eventually, we get to the point of explaining to them. So maybe God does that too. But right now, God is with Job telling him, "Listen, look at everything I've created. Where were you when I did any of that? What did you have to do with any of this? Before you question my wisdom, what I'm doing, why I've done this or that, let's make sure you remember where you came from and who I am." All right? And so he tells Job in verse number 15 of chapter 40, "Look now at the behemoth which I made along with you." Now, behemoth is a problem because, as in the margin of my Bible, it says simply a large animal, identity unknown. I would really like to take the liberty and put dinosaur there, but I haven't done that. Maybe in my own mind I have. Is what he's about to describe a dinosaur? "He's grass like an ox." Let's see some of these. "See now his strength that is in his hips. And his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. The bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs like bars of iron." You go into one of these museums and look at the, you know, this creature that was 40 foot long, and look at the ribs and the bones, and does it remind you of beams of bronze and bars of iron? "He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees in the covert of reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade, and the willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he's not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth, though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare." And I look at these. Tail like a cedar. Somebody said one time that they thought maybe this was the description of a hippopotamus or an elephant. Tail like a cedar just doesn't do justice to an elephant or hippopotamus. Again, ribs like bars of iron. I see pictures in textbooks. Where do they put dinosaurs? River rages around. He just stands there in the middle of the river, and it gushes by him in the flood stage, and he doesn't move a muscle. Because he doesn't have to. He's so big and strong and powerful. Was God telling Job, "Look over there. You see that dinosaur? You see that creature? I made him. You know that you can't go over there and whip him. You better not try." Is Job 41 a picture of some kind of a creature? Well, obviously it is. And these are not mythological. Again, these are real creatures that he could have looked at. "Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? Or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you? Will he speak softly to you?" And I'm not going to take the time to read all of this. Let's look at some of this. I like when one place in this text it says, "Remember the battle, you'll never do it again." If you try to take down this creature, you'll never do it again, probably because he'll take you down. He rises up. Somebody said, this sounds like a crocodile. You all around here have a lot of alligators around, maybe some crocodiles. Got a little bitty legs. You know, they don't rise up very high. Creates commotion in the water, only if it's wrestling with its prey. But when it's swimming through the water, they're very skilled, quietly going through the water. Skin is impenetrable. Alligators, and if I'm told right, crocodiles have a very soft underbelly. If you can get to them there, you're going to be able to take them. The skin here is not penetrable. Fire. Okay, now we got a problem. Oh, wait a minute. Fire coming out of a creature's mouth? Wait a minute. This has got to be a myth. Really? Well, I know these may not be the most outstanding illustrations to some folks, but God did create lightning bugs. He created bombardier beetles that can throw boiling mixtures at its predators. He created electric eels that can produce 600 watts, enough to stun a horse. And in Isaiah 14 and verse 29, it describes a fiery flying serpent, which doesn't seem to be in a figurative sense. It was some kind of a creature that they would have recognized even back then. And so, if this creature could breathe fire of some sort, then that should not be surprising to us at all that God could create a creature that did that. On earth, there's nothing like him. Dragon mist. You've heard of Carl Sagan. Well, this guy is an evolutionist as anybody could be. He was. The pervasiveness of dragon mist in the folk legends of many cultures is probably no accident. It's a worldwide phenomenon. Is it possible that dragons posed a problem for our postmodern ancestors of a few million years ago? I don't agree with his chronology, but I agree with his reasoning. Why would anybody write stories like this all over the world if it really didn't happen? You know, why would there be 200 accounts of a flood in all of these different cultures if it really didn't happen? You know, that he's just using the same reasoning that suggesting that maybe there was something back there. And so this is a guy that, real quickly, somebody says, oh, wait a minute, Lee, you can't have dinosaurs on an ark. Again, I'm just trying to show you there's some reasonable answers. 520 railroad boxcars, the cubic feet that somebody's figured up of space that you had on the ark, and it is possible they took non-adult animals. The largest dinosaur eggs indicate that a 40-foot-long dinosaur laid eggs that were less than a foot in diameter. So maybe he took the little ones on there, and then they grew up to be big when they got off the ark. Again, I don't know that that answers all of those questions, but I like to tell people at least there's a possibility. My final picture tonight, and then the lesson is yours, as I try to bring it to a conclusion. This is one of my favorite pictures. This is does that look like a hammer to you? Pretty well made. In fact, I've got a hammer at home. Doesn't look too much different than that. Now, it's not been covered by rock, but there's a wooden handle there. And you can see, and I think that's I think it's an octagon or an eight-sided on both ends hammer. Well, apparently somewhere along the line, this got covered up with rock that was obviously sediment at the time, and then it hardened, and there it is. Guess how old scientists say this rock is? 140 million years old. Wow. That's right in the middle of the dinosaur age. So that means dinosaurs are really neat tool makers. They can make really neat hammers. 140 million years ago. Or maybe not. Maybe there were human beings living back there that were making tools like that. And maybe it wasn't 140 million years ago either. You think? Take science and use it against them. And try to help some honest people see the truth of God's Word. Last quote, Louis Jacobs, Southern Methodist University, former president of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology, quote, co-occurrence of men and dinosaurs. Such an association would dispel an earth with vast antiquity, real old. The entire history of creation, including the day of rest, could be accommodated in the seven biblical days of the Genesis myth. That's his words. Evolution would be vanquished. In other words, if we could demonstrate any way at all man and dinosaurs lived at the same time. In his mind, that would be the end of the subject of evolution. Consider the evidence. See whether it's true. When I was many of your age, 19, 20, 21 years old, I'm certain I hadn't thought about many of these things. I'm not sure I was being confronted with them when I was going through public school as much as my own children and others since then. And I would have been intimidated, and probably still would be, to sit and listen to some who try to express what their views are on the subject of evolution. I'd probably say, listen, could you wait till Don Patton gets here and I'll let him debate you. But I'm not so afraid anymore that I think there isn't some information. And I'm saying all of this because I'm not ready to write off everybody who's an atheist or an evolutionist. I know a young man who, in the last few years, obeyed the gospel, and all it took for him really was to come to the conclusion that God created us. And when he was convinced of that, then believing that Jesus is the Christ and the Bible is true was just a short step for him. Once he recognized God made me and made me in his image. I'm not ready to let dinosaurs tear away, chew away, or take away from us the biblical picture of God creating us on the sixth day. There is a God. He created the world, Romans chapter 1. His word is truth, and therefore we are accountable to him. And so, as I said, this young man obeyed the gospel shortly after he realized, hey, if God created me, the Bible is true, and I had better do what it says. And he did. And he is a faithful Christian to this day. If that helps you tonight, give God the glory. Just trying to help. Think about these things. Study them further. Question them. If I've said anything tonight that you think, no, there's no way, you'd be kindly let me know that. We'll talk about it. I thank you for listening. I enjoy this lesson. It's a lot of fun for me. And I hope it's been helpful. We're going to sing a song of encouragement for you to come to the God who created you. Come to the God who made you. And that somewhere along the line you looked back at him and said, I'm sorry, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to go my way. Do my own thing. You turned your back on him. And then after a while you began to realize as you have this eternity put in your heart by God in Ecclesiastes 3. And now you turn back to him and say, I want to know that God. He's communicated to you in the person of Jesus Christ and his words found in the Bible. He wants you to come to him. If you're ready to come back home to him, if you've never been his, to repent of your sins and be baptized for the remission of every sin you've ever committed. If as a Christian somehow you've walked away from your commitment to him, maybe tonight just reestablish your faith in him. Get back to doing what you know you ought to do. And if you need to confess anything before us tonight, we'd be glad to hear it and pray together with you so you can be restored to your God. Stand and sing. Will you come if we can help you, please? There's a fountain free.